Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. Today, joining us on the program is a new guest. His name is Per Wimmer, and he manages Wimmer Financial and the Wimmer Family Office. Per, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Before we get started, you are actually involved in quite a few interesting things, some extreme sports. I saw something online about you skydiving over Mount Everest and then talking about doing trips to space.
Yeah, that's correct. Apart from my interest in finance and in investing and natural resources, I'm also an adventurer and a future astronaut. So it is true that in 2008, I conducted the first skydive about Mount Everest, tandem skydive with my partner in Ralph Mitchell, an English guy. So we successfully completed that. That's never been done before up until that point. We initially looked into climbing Everest, decided against it because we thought it was going to be too dangerous, and then decided to take Everest sort of top down, if you like, instead. And it was sort of a culmination of a number of adventure activities. Before that, I've traveled throughout the world. I've been to 72 countries on Earth. I've lived with the Indians in the Amazon. I've been skiing at 5,500 meters, the tallest, highest skiing station in the world. And I've traveled Africa thin and thick. So I've been doing a lot of sort of adventure stuff on Earth. Looking forward, my next adventures it relates to space. I'm signed up for two missions on two different rockets to go into space two private rockets, and can't wait to get up there. So that's going to be the ultimate adventure.
Yeah, it seems a little strange at first being in something like the resource space and then into extreme sports, but a lot of people I've noticed that are top in the business, you can take like a Robert Friedland or a Frank Giustra, they're in the highest risk businesses out there, the movie production business, boutique hotels, and speculating in resources. So it sounds like you've got that knack for adventure as well.
Absolutely. I've got a strong adventure gene. I mean, like I said, I've traveled, you know, throughout the world, and I've done all these great things and met all these amazing cultures and people. But obviously, when you're in the natural resource space, I mean, you also meet some very interesting characters, I have to say, and I've certainly met that throughout the past 10 years where I've had, Wimmer Financial going. So it has been really, really interesting. Obviously, seeing the super cycle and the good times and the bad times, and met a number of amazing entrepreneurs in the mining space. It's been a great privilege and really, really interesting. And we keep meeting new people and work with other investors on a daily basis. So really interesting and exciting, I think, would be characteristic of it. But obviously, from an investment point of view, you got to do your homework, and there's no replacement for that. You really got to roll up the sleeves and look into the story and the management team and the backgrounds and that sort of thing.
So, Per, you're based in London, and what's a little bit of background about Wimmer Financial and how you got into the resource space, where you guys fit in the resource space?
Yeah, I was a generalist before. I mean, my background is I used to work at Goldman's around the Scandinavian equities business, and had a couple of other stops at Colin Stewart, which is Canaccord today, and also Man Group, which is a $65 billion hedge fund. So I was a generalist, but at that point I started looking at good alpha ideas, where could we find alpha in the marketplace, and came across the natural resource space. This was sort of pre the super cycle, and thought there's some compelling supply demand dynamics taking place. And on the back of that, I decided that this was really a sector that was worth doing a lot more homework in. So I did, and with China consuming more and more of raw materials, I discovered that it was clearly a no-brainer from a supply-demand point of view. So we decided to get a lot more involved, and this is now 10 years ago, and we've been involved there ever since. So I really came as a generalist into the sector, but found it compelling. Yes, it's cyclical. Yes, it goes up and down, and it's certainly not for the faint-hearted. But it's also an exciting sector, and a sector that offers some very high returns from time to time.
Per, I see pictures online of you with people like Richard Branson and Elon Musk, probably to do with your interest in space. But thinking of Elon Musk and all of the interest around the EV space and batteries, why don't we start there as asking what kind of commodities you're most focused on? Are you focused on those energy metals and what else?
Absolutely. We're certainly playing the energy metals battery storage theme at the moment, and that would translate into the likes of cobalt, lithium, graphite, copper, nickel. So those type of metals, the battery metals, certainly are of great interest. And in fact, we are doing a lithium deal at the moment as we speak. So absolutely. Secondly, we do like precious metals a lot. So gold and silver, and we're heavily involved in that. We do think the quantitative easing that's is taking place around the world and the printing of money is beneficial to gold and silver as a hard asset hedge. And that's not going to go away anytime soon. So we still find that very compelling. Thirdly, base metals, copper, zinc, nickel, tin, all the base metals, I think still have a very compelling future just from an uptick in demand point of view. And yeah, we continue to have great appetite in that space specifically.
Per, looking at gold and silver, which have a bit of the take of the inflation story, they're a hedge against fiat currencies. Does that part of the equation interest you, or are you more so focused on the supply-demand issues coming out of China and worldwide?
On gold specifically, we look at both. It is certainly an inflation protection. It is a hedge against when things turn bad, and I think gold certainly has got a place in any portfolio. So it is an important asset class almost in its own right. But obviously, we do look at supply-demand. We do look at all of these other normal factors that has impact on the gold price. Our view is we think gold is going to sort of stay reasonably stable at sort of between 1150 and 1350 in a foreseeable future, say the next 12 months. So one way is obviously to play through the physical, but another way is to play through junior mining companies where you can actually get operational leverage as these companies go into production or increase their production. So there are many ways to play it, and it could also be through the ETFs. I mean, we do trade ETFs as well. Many ways to implement the same theme.
Excellent. And being that you're based in London, you probably have access to companies on the AIM, the ASX, and the TSX, whereas a lot of Canadian investors stay solely on the TSX. Is that true? And also, where geographically are you focused on projects? Any no-go zones?
So we are global. We're truly global. Anywhere from Australia, Asia, South America, North America, Europe, Africa, etc. Currently, we stay a little bit clear of Russia, Venezuela, Southern Sudan, and Zimbabwe, for that matter. So a little bit of the spicy end of the political spectrum in general, but slightly less spicy. We would consider even spicier part of Africa, say, for instance. Although there are jurisdictions in Africa specifically that have put themselves into no-go zones, like Tanzania, for instance. They have shot themselves in the foot by making it prohibitively uninteresting for foreign investors to come in, given what they're doing on the political side. And South Africa is certainly heading that way as well. They're not improving their politics at all. So, but other places like Namibia, Botswana, and that sort of thing is very interesting. In South America, Chile is fantastic, and Peru, and many other countries. And obviously North America, Canada, US, we like. We're recently active in a gold deal in Spain, listed on the TSX, a company called Black Dragon Gold, where we're active on. So we're global, truly global, both in terms of listings and in terms of where we go.
Per, you manage significant amount of capital, much of which is deployed in the commodity space, and You've talked a little bit about your outlook for gold over the next 12 months. Commodities seem to run in tandem, cyclically speaking, and we're in a little bit of a lull right now, or at least a breathing area. Do you foresee in the next 12 to 24 months having a resumption of the bull market in these junior and mid-tier companies?
Yeah, I do think the bottom of the mining market, if you like, was probably 18 months ago, and we're now sort of in a solid trajectory where things are actually getting better day by day. By way of anecdote, I was attending the Denver Gold Show a year ago in Colorado Springs, and you didn't really see a lot of interest from the majors. I mean, they would send a few guys in there. This year round, there was a massive presence of them. They're taking very seriously, and that sort of feeds down the food chain. So I think we're definitely in a cyclical uptick in the sector, in particular for the battery metals, for the precious and the base. The bulks are a little bit behind, the coal and the iron ore and that sort of thing. There's a little bit of oversupply in that. But for the upper end of it, the base and the precious, I think definitely life is looking very good and very, very, very positive. And also some of the ags, phosphate and potash, also has a good outlook, because people still need to eat around the world, and you need to get more and more out of your agricultural resources. So yes, I think the junior mining sector has certainly got a positive hill to climb here now, and we're sort of on the way up back up again from a very ugly and dark bottom 18 months ago.
Yeah, let's talk about the agriculture space a bit. In fact, I was introduced to you and able to do this interview by way of Rob and Mike over at GenSource Potash, which is a company that we've been invested in for quite some time. Per, what do you see playing out in the potash space? What are you looking for? Obviously, you're interested in GenSource, so what kind of lit up there for you?
Yeah, I think what I've specifically liked about the GenSource story is the fact it's actually reasonably low capex. The problem we have in potash as an industry is that it's fairly oligopolistic. You have few players, and they kind of control the marketplace. And in addition to that, the capex typically for these projects is huge. It's usually into the billions. So you have very high capital barriers to entry, and you have world domination by a few players. Having an approach like GenSource, where they come in at much lower capex, I mean, potentially up to $200 million, so a lot less, and also with a clever model on how to integrate the whole supply chain and get end users involved, including in the project, I think it's very, very intelligent, and it's a sort of potash type of project that we've been looking for a while, to find something like that that would lower the risk and increase the returns and have sort of a one-stop solution for the full food chain from start to finish. In addition to the fact that GenSource also has some very clever ideas in terms of how they get the phosphate out of the ground without taking the salt part up, i.e. leaving the salt down in the underground, which is environmentally hugely beneficial, because a lot of the environmental problems around potash is that you get a big salt mountain, and then you got to deal with that, make sure that doesn't leak too much. But leaving the salt downstairs, which is what GenSource intends to do, it's much, much better. So GenSource net is a low capex, environmentally friendly, straightforward, with a very entrepreneurial driven management team, and we like all of the above.
Per, I'm not sure where I'm going to be going with this question, but you mentioned with potash the nature of the deposits being big and deep and how it's extracted, that it's prohibitively expensive in most cases. And I find it interesting to look at specific commodities. Take cobalt as an example. It's a secondary metal in the production of copper and nickel in particularly dangerous areas of the world. Or you can look at uranium, which is a commodity that doesn't have very much price sensitivity from the end user, being uranium reactors. And, you know, I guess it's an interesting element of the commodity space. And I guess a question I can develop from that is, are there any other really peculiar situations in the commodity space right now that have piqued your interest because of some peculiarity in the commodity?
No, I mean, we really look at sort of demand, supply, and what is the most, what are the most compelling commodities at the moment. We tend to play more mainstream than specialty metals, like zircon or mineral sands or things like that. I mean, we will look at it, but we tend to be a little bit more precious-based bulk type of guys. So no, it's really down to the fundamentals. I mean, what is compelling, what works, what looks most interesting at any point in time globally.
Excellent. Well, Per, thanks for giving us 15 minutes of your time here. And in fact, more than that, as we've had a few discussions leading up to this interview. And I really enjoyed having you on the program and look forward to getting you back on the program in the future.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?